when I was pregnant, I felt great. I had no symptoms, no flares. So on my own accord, I stopped all of my medications, which worked during my pregnancy. But then when my daughter was about, you know, 3.5, 4 months old, my body flared like with a vengeance.
This is Nadia, who got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis at age 15 in Toronto, Canada. After managing her digestive disease for 25 years, Nadia received a colorectal cancer diagnosis in 2022. Today, she's telling us all about her IBD journey and how she navigates life with an ostomy. This is Talking Shit, presented by Colitis Unfiltered. My name is Frank Tabering, and Nadia, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
To set the context, I would like to start off and jump right into your IBD journey. So I think in a few sentences, if you could just give us an overview of the timeline from diagnosis, but also to how you are today.
So I was diagnosed with IBD, specifically ulcerative colitis, when I was 15 years old. I was having some symptoms, you know, for a few months. And then when I finally had a colonoscopy a couple weeks before my 16th birthday, that's when I got my IBD diagnosis. So I lived with IBD for about 25 years, right? I did, clinical trials, different medications, all of that. And in 2022, I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer, early stages, and now I live with a permanent ileostomy.
In the time sort of since your diagnosis, before your cancer diagnosis, were you in remission? Were you stable? Did you have flare-ups? Like, how did you feel over that long period of time?
So it was a long period of very up and down. So with IBD, you know, flares can come at any time. And I went through quite a few of them, some of them, you know, more severe than others, and treated, you know, with a number of different medications. So, you know, it was a constant, you know, roller coaster, right, of emotions for sure. And, you know, I did go through some periods of remission, you know, especially before my cancer diagnosis. I was at like, you know, a 4.5, almost 5 year remission, right? So that was a big win for me. And just, you know, it took a lot out of me emotionally, right? To be constantly, you know, worried about, you know, when I'm going to flare, if I'm going to flare, and, you know, when that kind of the ball was going to drop.
Mm-hmm. So what I like to do typically on this show is I would like to take the audience on a journey. And then usually I start with the past, you know, look at the present and then go into the future. So let's go back to the basics, essentially. What were your first symptoms, you know, that showed up where you thought, you know what, something is really wrong here. I better get this checked out. Take us through that a little bit.
So my first symptoms were, you know, intense abdominal cramping, right? Having to use the washroom a lot, having, you know, blood in my stool. And, you know, the blood was like just so scary, a huge red flag. And, you know, that's when I knew this something has to be checked.
Putting yourself back into the moment where you were diagnosed, how did the doctor, if you remember, and especially you were 15, so you take these news completely differently than somebody aged 29 like me, you know, or even older. How did the doctor break the news to you? Do you remember that? And also what went through your mind at that very specific time?
So I remember being in hospital, and I remember, you know, my parents being with me. You know, I was still young. I was a minor. And so they told my parents as well as myself, like, I didn't know really what to expect. All I knew was that I was going to be having to take medication and take that medication daily. So to manage my disease. So it was scary. I have to say it was very scary because, again, I wasn't familiar at all with the diagnosis. So not having social media or anything at the time, right? The internet was not really, you know, a place for me to search. So all I had really was my doctor.
So that's actually a very good point, because I always talk about educating yourself, especially if you have a doctor that might not go into too much detail, right? And then I always say people should be very careful about what they read on the internet as well. But with the lack of the internet, so you said you only had your doctor. Does that mean that your doctor was somebody that you could trust from the beginning, somebody that was proactive in terms of trying to attack the disease? Like, what was your relationship with your doctor in the first, you know, months or years even?
At the beginning, right, because I also was so young, I my only instinct was to just trust them and just do whatever they said, right? I didn't really do too much of my own research at that time until I got a little bit older, until I was more familiar with different resources that were available to me, right? There were some support groups that I found online. And, you know, through that, I also found, you know, someone that I actually went to high school with that also had the disease. And, you know, we ended up being in the same clinical trial, like that whole kind of thing. So that being said, right, like in terms of trusting my physician at that young age, yes, I did have a lot of trust in my physician, and I just kind of did whatever she told me to do at the time.
So we talked about it already. 15 is a very young age, especially to be confronted with such a brutal disease. If you look back, not just age 15, but also the following years, sort of really those golden teenage years, how did you navigate the disease physically, but also mentally?
At the time, you know, I was super embarrassed and not open at all about my disease, right? It was like, especially because of the nature of the symptoms, you know, I didn't share that with anybody. Like none of my friends knew, you know, if I had a flare up, you know, I would just be away from school sick. Right? Like I never disclosed, you know, what I was actually feeling or what I was actually going through. So that also in its own turn, like took a toll on me emotionally because I had to keep everything in. I mean, my family knew, of course, but it was hard to like, you know, keep all of these kind of like secrets, so to speak, from my close friends.
So then I'm assuming you also experienced this feeling that a lot of colitis patients experience, no matter the age, so this feeling of isolation and just wanting to be alone, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's for sure. Yeah.
So you had a period of 25 years that you were, like I said, on and off remission, you know, and one thing that I kind of like to ask is because this is something that when I talk to people, they sometimes worry about, and this is sort of like burning through treatments, switching from one medication to the next. There's this trend that for people with severe colitis or moderate to severe colitis, very rarely you hear about them being on one treatment and that one treatment basically sticking with them for life. So could you quickly take us through some of the general treatments or medications that you went through, you know, over the years before you were diagnosed with colorectal cancer?
Yeah, sure. So when I first was diagnosed, I was on a 5-ASA anti-inflammatory drug called Pentasa. So I did that. I was on Imuran. Prednisone was prescribed to me for flare-ups, you know, and then, you know, it came to a point where prednisone wasn't really working so much like for in my flares, right? So I switched to biologic medications. So the first biologic I did was in a clinical trial for Humira. That didn't really work for me personally. So then I went for, you know, another few years of, you know, eating a specific diet, trying different medications, trying natural remedies, doing all of the things. And, you know, I had when I was pregnant with my daughter, after I had her, I had one of the most severe flare-ups I've ever had that lasted, you know, almost a year because I was just trying to do like so many things to try to get out of that flare, which, you know, some things helped, but eventually ended up going on a different biologic, which was Remicade. And Remicade worked for me for, you know, for again, 4 or 5 years. Then I, you know, became resistant to that medication. And that's when I was in my final, you know, clinical trial, final medication before remission, before my colorectal cancer diagnosis, which was Rinvoq.
Very rarely do I find stories or even information about, you know, pregnancy and ulcerative colitis and flaring. So I'm very interested to learn how you navigated pregnancy with colitis. Of course, you don't have it. You don't have anything to compare it to a pregnancy of like without colitis right before. But you know, how did you navigate flaring or dealing with all the medication? Just take us through that a little bit.
When I was pregnant, I felt great. I had no symptoms, no flares. So on my own accord, I stopped all of my medications. Right. Which worked during my pregnancy. But then when my daughter was about, you know, 3.5, 4 months old, my body flared like with a vengeance. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
it was your decision essentially to stop the medications. Yeah. It's not like the doctor recommended it. Like you no. could have stayed on the medications throughout the pregnancy without any risk, right?
That's right.
You mentioned that you went through high school, I believe, right, with somebody that had colitis as well. Do you feel like having that relationship or that connection with that person, that was sort of a springboard for you to open up about the disease more? Or was there something else in life, maybe just getting older, that enabled you to actually come out of your shell, to sort of beat your loneliness, and to also openly speak about the disease more? When did that happen, and why did that happen? Because of what?
The person that I mentioned that I went to high school with, we ended up finding each other when we were in the clinical trial. So it was many years after high school was over. And so we just came to learn that we both had colitis in high school, but we both didn't know. Right. So we both had the same approach of, you know, not telling anybody, keeping it a secret, you know, being embarrassed, feeling lonely. We shared all of those sentiments. But in high school, you know, I started dating my now husband. Right. And, you know, I remember flaring pretty early in our relationship. And he was the actual first person, you know, outside of like my immediate family that I told about my diagnosis. And ever since then, he's never, you know, judged me for it. He's never always like took care of me. So I am very grateful for that. So in terms of, you know, having somebody to talk to, not somebody that actually had the disease, but I did have him, you know, to talk to and to navigate, like, you know, through some of the emotions that I was having, you know, outside of like my family.
So you had periods of remission during those 25 years, but you had your flares. And I'm very active on the Reddit community because you really have, it's a space where people who are afraid to speak about it, I guess, you know, around peers, family, this is where they go to ask questions. And one of the questions that I just come see pop up again and again is, hey, I'm flaring or have my first flare or this flare is worse. How do you guys deal with it? What are your tips and tricks? So how did you navigate flares?
Every time I speak about IBD, I always say that IBD is not a cookie cutter disease, right? So everybody is affected by IBD differently, and what works for one person may not work for the next. So that's the beauty of having like an online community or support system, because you can see, you know, what works for one person may not work for another, but it gives you that, you know, opportunity to try something you may not have tried already, right? So when I would be flaring, first thing I would do, you know, is just eat a very plain, simple diet, right? Ensuring, you know, lots of fluids and, you know, nutritious foods, like, for example, like bone broth or, you know, things that are easy to eat, easy to digest, things that don't upset my, you know, digestive system because it's already, you know, on high alert. So, you know, that those would be like my basic like tips and tricks, and trying to avoid stress, ensuring, you know, you get enough rest, because, you know, even in a flare up, it's hard to rest as well, because you're always running to the washroom. You're waking up in the middle of the night, going to the washroom. So like you're constantly, constantly tired, right? So ensuring that you get a lot of rest and, you know, a lot of nutrients is really key.
Yeah, so definitely from what I'm hearing is you centered the management of your flares around dietary adjustments and
yes.
making sure that, you know, you don't sort of worsen any symptoms based on what you eat. Maybe looking at your experience with colitis, but also going through colorectal cancer, how has this misadventure, if I can call it that, changed you as a person?
So I think personally, like, having my cancer diagnosis and then my living with an ostomy has kind of really enabled me to want to share my story even more, right? When I had IBD, you know, there's always the possibility of the outcome to have an ostomy, right? Because when you don't respond anymore to treatment, or, you know, you flare up severely, you would, you know, may end up with an ostomy. So that was always on my mind. And I have to say, like, even when I was diagnosed with cancer and I knew I was going to have ostomy surgery, I was initially less concerned about the cancer and more concerned about living with an ostomy because of the negative stigma that I myself had associated with ostomies, right? Like, you know, maybe being judged for it, how the way that it looked, if it was smelly, right? Like how I was going to manage my ostomy. But I, you know, I had started my Gutsy Girl Diaries, you know, Instagram account prior and blog prior to my colorectal cancer diagnosis. So, you know, already having a platform to share with others in the same, you know, situation or caregivers in the same situation really helped me to, you know, navigate through my diagnosis.
You mentioned it. There's a lot of stigma around, you know, living without intestines. So let's break that stigma down. How are you living with this today? And are you limited? Is there something that you cannot do? And also, do you still have issues sometimes? Because again, for some people, it's like having surgery is not necessarily a cure, right? For IBD, it can still be present. So how are you doing? And what is life like for you in this situation?
So overall, I have to say my ostomy gave me my life back, right? A lot of things that I would be fearful of doing with IBD, I now can do with my ostomy. Like, for example, you know, going on a road trip or, you know, going to a concert and, you know, not having to worry about urgency or, you know, finding a bathroom or that kind of thing, right? I mean, there are still like the challenges that I have with my ostomy in terms of, you know, dealing with ostomy leaks or, you know, finding the right appliance and ensuring like, you know, I have the right products and being prepared. You know, there's all of that. But as a whole, right, like, you know, health-wise, I am so much better, right? My inflammation is so much lower. My energy levels are so much higher, right? Because, you know, I no longer have active IBD, right? Although I do have other IBD associated, you know, symptoms or conditions, right? I don't have like that urgency, right? And I think like for anybody with IBD or even IBS, that feeling of urgency is like one of the worst feelings, right? Mm. And I remember after my surgery, like being in hospital and kind of finding it weird, like that I didn't feel that, right? Because I was so used to always being like so nervous, so tense, right? Because of that urgency feeling, and it's just terrible. So I don't miss it.
Right. Yeah. And so this is very interesting because you feel something for so long, you do something for so long, and all of a sudden from one day to the next, it ceases to exist. How long did it take you to actually get used to, well, the lack of that feeling and this new feeling that you had?
If I had to say something, I would say like 6 months, right? Because sometimes too, like even like the whole adjustment with, you know, having an ostomy and doing different things with my ostomy, right? Like I had to take it like little things at a time, like, for example, traveling or going swimming or, you know, just because I wanted to ensure that I kind of understood everything that went along with having the ostomy, right? So yeah, I would say about a 6 month period, like it took me to really feel like, oh, wow, like I, you know, I don't have to go to the washroom like I used to kind of thing, or I don't have those feelings that I used to.
So we can summarize this again, and I think it's very important to focus on this, is like living with an ostomy is actually completely okay, right?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, it does have its challenges, but overall, it's very possible, and you're not limited in doing anything that you don't want, you know what I mean, that you want to do.
During that period, and especially getting used to the ostomy as well, how has that impacted like your own body image and also your relationship with your husband? In what ways has that sort of impacted you or affected you?
So, you know, for me, it was a very personal thing, right? Like I do share about my ostomy online. I do show my ostomy online. That took a while as well. But, you know, my husband never made me feel uncomfortable or anything like that. Like he always embraced it. I mean, he always like does my ostomy pouch changes with me, like, you know, and it's just that extra level of, you know, care and support is, you know, so important, right? And navigating, you know, even through IBD, through any kind of like, you know, health concern or health issue, I think is super important, right? And, you know, in terms of my body image, like it took me a long time to accept, you know, how my body would look. And even now, like looking back at old pictures where I don't have the ostomy, like it's kind of foreign. Like I sometimes I forget that how my body looked before, right? But my husband says, like, you know, sometimes I don't realize it, but, you know, he says that I seem more confident in my own skin or in my own body now than I did before surgery. So, you know, I feel like that's a positive thing, right? And I'm not as embarrassed anymore as I was when I first got it. Like when I first got my ostomy pouch, I would dress in such a way to always kind of try to hide it or, you know, make, you know, look normal, right? So yeah, it's been quite a journey in terms of body image. You know, it's still a struggle every day, but overall it's good.
Yeah. So when I reflect on my own IBD journey and what I went through, I always look at ulcerative colitis or IBD as a blessing and a curse. In what ways do you relate to that train of thought?
A blessing in the sense of, you know, it's kind of like a red flag or an alert that, you know, we all have just one body and we really have to do our best to take care of it, right? And to nurture it and to give it what it needs to survive, right? Like the body is like an amazing machine, right? And I think it's just so important to give it the care, right? And to, you know, be mindful of what you put in your body, make sure you move your body and keep it healthy. You know, certain things are outside of our control, right? Like an IBD diagnosis or a cancer diagnosis or, you know, certain illnesses. But what we can control and in terms of what we put inside our body and our output, I think is important.
Very well put. I completely agree with you. For people that are out there that are struggling, who are afraid, who don't have the disease under control, what is your message to those people?
So my message is, you know, one day at a time, right? And to just focus on, you know, the things that are working, right? Sometimes it's hard to, you know, kind of get out of your out of a negative mindset, like when you're in a flare and thinking, you know, I'm never going to get better. I'm never going to, you know, do the things that I want to do, right? But to always, you know, persevere and to never give up.
So you've been with IBD for a long, long time. And, you know, of course, times have changed, but in some areas, times have not changed, especially when it comes to misconceptions in regards to IBD, colitis, yeah, ostomy. What do you think are some common misconceptions about IBD out there still today?
I think some common misconceptions, right, which I speak to as well, you know, the whole notion of like, you know, somebody like doesn't look sick, right? So, you know, sometimes it's questioned in terms of, you know, like, how come today you're able to go out and the next day you're not, right? Like, you know, so there's a lot of like, you know, misunderstandings or misconceptions around, you know, the nature of the disease, right? And, you know, how can it be like so up and down, right? And I think, you know, just having the opportunity to share, right, just really gives perspective, right, for other people who may not know much about IBD, that, you know, I kind of like a day in the life, right, that, you know, some days you can do all the things and other days you just really can't.
Now, the last thing that I want to mention in regards to the past is, if you could go back and you could speak to yourself, your 15-year-old, on diagnosis day, what would you say to yourself?
I think I would say to myself not to worry, that everything will be okay, and to always, you know, look at the bright side of things and to stay strong. So
sometimes keeping it short and simple is actually carries a lot more power than going into a long tirade. So I can appreciate that. You are an advocate. You are doing your part in raising awareness. You mentioned you're active on Instagram. You started a blog and you named it the Gutsy Girl Diaries. Can you tell us a little bit about that, a little bit about what it is that you do and the ways that you try to support others with this condition or similar IBD?
Yeah. So I started Gutsy Girl Diaries in 2018 when I was in a severe flare up. And just when I was starting my clinical trial with Rinvoq, I decided that I wanted to break the stigma and also put myself out there and, you know, identifying, you know, what would I have wanted if I was just diagnosed, right? And going back to, you know, when I was 15, there was nothing available to me, right? And some people find it so hard to share, right? Like even when I post something, I'll get a lot of people who won't comment on the actual post, but they'll send me a private message because they don't feel comfortable, right? And that's the point, like creating, you know, a safe environment for people to share, to be open. And the word Gutsy, I just got from, you know, before starting my actual page and like, you know, going on Instagram, going online, anything like that had Gutsy associated with it, you know, referred to IBD, right? Right. Or something like that. So I just kind of used it as that. And I just went with it. And so, you know, I share my recipes. I share, you know, my day to day, what I do for exercise, you know, my treatments, that kind of thing. And, you know, it took me through, like, you know, my colorectal cancer journey and living with an ostomy. And it's opened me to, you know, so many different connections and people and, you know, partnerships, you know, with, for example, Colorectal Cancer Canada and, you know, other people and other brands.
Oh, that's really great. And so for everybody who's listening or watching, we're going to put links to all of that in the show notes as well. So you can check out Nadia's blog and connect with her individually as well. Do you have today any regrets when you think about disease management over the years, decisions that you took, maybe decisions that you followed from your doctor or doctors? Any regrets?
I have to say, no, I don't. I know that, you know, when we talk about the doctor-patient relationship, I think that that's super important. And I had a really good relationship with my GI. You know, again, she's known me since I was first diagnosed at 15. And, you know, we had our rocky periods, you know, when I kind of didn't want to take my medication. I didn't want to do what she was telling me to do. So we would, you know, butt heads. But it ended up being a beautiful relationship in the end. And it really helped me advocate for myself, right? Because when you have that comfort with your practitioner, it makes, you know, you sharing exactly how you feel and your symptoms exactly how you are, that's makes it that much easier, right? And I really feel that that's also kind of what saved me, right? Because if I didn't feel as open to share with her when I was just kind of feeling kind of off and it wasn't really a flare and I don't know what I should do, right? You know, had I waited and, you know, my diagnosis with my cancer could have been a more severe one, right? So I think that, you know, patient advocacy is a huge thing that I speak to. And I think it's so important for everybody to have that comfort and that voice for themselves.
Yeah, and this is a very interesting take because I always speak about how important it is to have a gastroenterologist who's very proactive, right? Who listens to you, who acknowledges your concerns. But you raised an interesting point is that sometimes you actually have a doctor or GI that is very proactive, but it's the patient that is reluctant, right? Or sort of like comes back with some resistance. So having a very good relationship, I think will have help break down that fear and that barrier. And this is what I advocate for most, you know, find yourself a proactive doctor. And if you have one, you find one, you're very lucky and listen to them in that case. You know, that means they really have the best at heart for you.
100%. And I feel like too, like they will advocate for you as well, right? Like, because one hard thing that I had to deal with between my IBD diagnosis and my cancer diagnosis was that after my surgery, I technically don't have IBD anymore, right? Because, you know, ulcerative colitis affects the large colon only, right? And I wasn't going to be seeing her anymore. So it was just a very emotional time with that as well, because she became, you know, such an important part of my life, right? Seeing her every 6 months, right? Sharing, you know, all she saw me all through all my, you know, journey in life, right? Like graduating university, getting married, having children, right? So it's just, they become a part of you as well. So I just feel like that is just so important.
and really amazing, I have to say, and I'm very happy that you got to experience this, is to actually be able to stick with one GI essentially through your entire journey over such a long period of time. That's really, really amazing. So a stroke of luck.
Yeah, we used to joke about, like, you know, I'd say like, oh, like it's 20 years, like I've been seeing you, and she'd be like, oh, well, you're getting old, right? So, you know, we always had that like banter between us. So, and I feel like that also, it helped me to be more open as well.
Yeah, love to hear it. So I want to part with you by looking ahead a little bit. And even though this question might be very, very hard to answer, I still like to get your feel for it. Do you think that we will see a cure to IBD in our lifetime?
I really hope so. I really hope so, because there's so many different advances in medicine and changes and, you know, opportunity of, you know, studying different aspects, right? And the more people share, I feel the more opportunity there will be for a cure, right? Because there's, like I said, IBD is not a cookie cutter disease. So it's hard, you know, to manage every different aspect, right, that people feel. So I really do hope that, you know, one day there is a cure, because it is such a terrible disease.
Nadia, thank you so, so much. I think this was a very inspiring conversation. I really love how open you are, and I love what you're doing as well with your Instagram, with your blog. So make sure everybody who's listening to check this out. And thank you so much again for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Shit, presented by Colitis Unfiltered. I'm Frank Tabring, and if this hit home or hit your gut, do us a favor, subscribe to the show, and follow us at Colitis Unfiltered on YouTube, Substack, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and Reddit. We'll see you soon for more inspiring stories from the bathroom floor.